Welcome to the Ask the Experts show, where the experts offer you educational information from local experts in the field of legal health, financial, and home improvement. Join us every week at this time for great educational information from lawyers, doctors, contractors, and specialists in their field. Sit back and enjoy the next hour of Ask the Experts.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Ask the Experts radio show live on 610 ESPN here in Philadelphia. Today on the Ask the Experts show, we have Mr. Robert Coco of the law offices of Robert P. Coco PC. He's your consumer protection lawyer. Welcome back to the show, Bob. How you doing?
Thank you, Maurice. I'm doing well.
Good to see you as always. The last time we were on the show, we were talking about credit and all the issues of debt and credit. And this show, we want to talk a little bit about common consumer litigation disputes, all the issues that come with being a consumer, people, you know, trying to pinch their pennies out there. I think I saw a piece on one of the news reports where it said that the byline was, being alive in America just keeps getting more expensive. So people are trying to find ways to get the best deal for their buck, and then sometimes they get into issues because of that. But before we get into it, tell us a little bit about your law offices and your background so people have a sense. New audience may want to know about you.
Sure. I've been a lawyer practicing in Philadelphia for a little over 20 years now, and I've concentrated in the area of consumer protection law since around 2000, 2002 perhaps. And it's an area, unfortunately, that's under-practiced in the area of law. There's plenty of personal injury lawyers. There's lots of criminal defense lawyers. But consumer protection law is something that's not as well known as it should be because everybody in the country is a consumer.
Mm.
Whereas you aren't always in the somebody who's injured, for example, or someone who's facing a criminal charge. You're always a consumer, and you can always be taken advantage of, unfortunately, because that's what capitalism's about. If you don't educate yourself and don't protect yourself, you could get into trouble.
Indeed, indeed. And that's true words never spoken. One of the key issues out there certainly is car fraud, auto fraud. Mm-hmm. A lot of people face that because they're trying to buy good used cars or brand new cars if they're lucky, but good used cars mostly. So let's say if I bought a used car as is and I still sue the dealer if they lied to me about a problem with the car that I discover after sale. That seems to be a common problem out there with used car fraud.
Yeah, so a lot of people are discouraged by the term as is.
Mm.
Thinking that if they bought it with that disclosure, that means they can't sue for problems that arise later. But that's not true. There is a limited amount of issues you can sue on in a used car fraud scenario, but those limited issues arise very frequently and could be powerful claims if they're asserted. So the proper way to think about a used car transaction is two ways. Number one, did you ask about something and then later find out you were lied to about it, right? That's going to indicate, at least on a simple level, that you were defrauded. And fraud is a cause of action you can bring. As is, only is a defense to warranty claims, right? But that doesn't mean that as is a ticket for the dealer to lie to you about whatever they want to, regardless of any legal consequences. That's not true.
Mm.
And then the other issue is whether they or not they disclose things to you that the law requires them to disclose to you, regardless of whether you as a consumer buyer asked questions about the car.
Mm.
So the most important issue, and most important because it affects the value of the car most, that you're purchasing is prior collision damage. Half of the cars on the road have been in some type of collision, and many of them are not repaired properly. The insurance companies are pushing those cars out the door for as cheaply as possible. They can get it done. And you may not know from the dealer representations whether this car was in a serious collision.
So, Bob, with that said, let's say during a sales presentation, you know, there are certain issues with the car's condition that a dealer has to advise a person on, regardless of whether they asked a question or not about the car or its history. What are some things that we should be looking out for?
Right. So the Pennsylvania Code has a section called Automotive Industry Trade Practices, and there's five or six areas that they have to disclose to you.
Hmm.
They are frame damage to a car. We'll talk a little bit about what that means
later.
flood damage to a car, which I think a lot of people are familiar with. After Katrina, a lot of flood damaged cars found their way into the used car market.
Never mind rainstorms of a given summer.
Yeah, it could be something, freak incidents like flash floods and so forth can really seriously affect a vehicle. The engine block or head is cracked. The vehicle can't pass state inspection. The transmission or differential are so damaged or defective, deteriorated as to require replacement. So those are all the issues that they have to disclose to you if they know about them.
Mm. So, for instance, talk to me about frame damage. What are some of the common issues? Frame damage, I hear a lot about. Flood damage, certainly, as we spoke about. And engine block damage seems to be a little more rare and a little tougher to find.
Yeah, that's not the most common issue we face.
Sure.
Right? Frame damage is probably the most commonly concealed issue. So, and it's simple explanation of what it is the frame of the car used to be just two rails, and then the suspension and the body got put on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, cars have unibody construction, which is like a cage, and that's all welded together, and then that holds the parts of the car together. But it also performs an important safety function, the frame, and that is that it's designed by the car manufacturers to absorb collision and an impact in a certain way.
So it's more advanced.
Yeah. It's an advancement, definitely, in car construction. And it's supposed to absorb that collision so that the passengers and the driver of the car don't absorb the collision. So it's important that it be as strong as when it was fabricated. And if it's in an accident and it's bent or twisted or cracked in any way, then that will affect its strength. And it'll have weak points that will not perform as well if it's in a subsequent collision. So as a result, that's a very important issue, and it's one that very often the car dealers know about because they're buying a lot of used cars at auctions, like a Mannheim auction, which people are familiar with. And very, very often when they buy the car, it's announced by the auction as frame damaged or structurally damaged, which is basically the same thing, and the seller of the car at auctions disclosing that. Now, the important thing is whether they're disclosing that to the buyers. And very often they're not, because right. You can buy a car more cheaply if it's frame damaged. And if you don't tell the purchaser of the car about that, you're selling the car essentially for more than it's worth. And it's also a car that someone arguably may not buy at all as a used car, because they don't want a car that's potentially dangerous if it's in another accident. Mm. So that's a very important issue, and it's one that they have to talk about, right? If you're just asking questions about collision damage or about prior accidents, that's something you have to ask. They don't have to tell you that there's an accident if there's no frame damage. Mm. So it's always important to just ask basic questions when you go there. You know, a lot of people make jokes about car dealers. Oh, you can't trust me, he's a used car dealer. But yet they go there and trust them completely, which is a very ironic thing.
Mildly counterintuitive.
Yeah, I would say so.
Let's say, you know, should I ask for a Carfax when I buy a car, and will the Carfax tell me about every collision accident that the car's been before I buy it? A lot of people are following Carfax. They're really trying to check that out, so it's a key question, we think.
So Carfax is a useful resource. You don't want to depend on it completely. The problem with Carfax is not that the information that it contains is accurate or inaccurate. Most of the times it is accurate. The problem with it is that it's not complete.
Mm.
Because Carfax is depending on subscribers to its service to report accidents or collisions or any other issues that there are with the vehicle. So it's not going to insurance databases, because insurance companies don't share their information with Carfax. It's not going to law enforcement and looking through their databases. It's, as I said, simply transmitting the information that's transmitted to it.
Mm.
It may be doing something to verify it, but it's not independently collecting that information. So it's a valuable resource. There's a comparable resource called AutoCheck that's owned by Experian, one of the large credit reporting agencies. And you should always try to check both, because some will have information that the other won't. It's not that they'll contradict each other, but it's more complete if you look at both of them. But you don't want to depend on Carfax as what the dealer used to determine if there was accidents. And I think that's a mistake that people make.
Even if it says there's no structural damage?
Right. So once again, that's the same problem, is that when the car dealer's putting that car out on the lot or looking at it after they buy it at auction, they're not depending on the Carfax to tell them about structural damage, because they know that that's not a scientific determination or a determination based on all the data that's available. That's just nobody's told Carfax about structural damage. That's not the same thing as someone with automotive industry knowledge looking at the car and seeing whether or not it has it. Because sometimes frame damage can be very subtle. They're manufactured with such precision these days in vehicles that millimeters of departure from square can mean frame damage. So the car dealer is looking at the car, visually inspecting it, using their technicians to inspect it. When they give you a Carfax, that's a sales tool. So if you don't look beyond it, you don't ask beyond it, they're not going to offer more, most likely. And in fairness to consumers, it's hard to know about frame damage unless somebody's telling you about it, because most of the frame's covered by parts of the car.
Right, and you don't have this X-ray machine to go over the car to look at it and say, okay, well, there's that crack or there's that bend.
No, there is a sophisticated instrument called a frame machine, which can measure frame damage, but that's not something you're going to do on a sales lot.
Unless, of course, you bring it with you.
That would be quite an undertaking.
So, Bob, is let's say pre-owned, certified pre-owned. Is buying a certified pre-owned vehicle a guarantee that a car is not accident or collision damaged, or has it other major problems other used cars commonly have?
Yeah, so this is another thing to be very alert to, and that people rely too heavily on, just as we discussed just now with Carfax. A certified pre-owned program is supposed to mean that, as the advertisements indicate, that this car is inspected in more ways than the average used car that's put out on the lot. And typically, a dealer that sells a particular make of a manufactured car will certify them according to the manufacturer's program, 160-point inspection, and so forth. The problem is that very often the manufacturers are requiring these dealers to sell a lot of these certified cars, because it raises the brand, and they want people to think that this car is guaranteed not to have the problems that a used car does. And very often you do have that guarantee. So you have an advantage if those problems arise. And the problem is that these problems do commonly arise with certified pre-owned cars too. Good news, of course, is because they're making greater promises, you have more factual basis to sue them if they lie about any of those things. Mm. But it's something that is used as a way to sell cars and is inconsistently true. Let's put it that way.
So let's say we face that. So would I be able to sue under the Lemon Law when I buy a bad used car?
So Lemon Law in Pennsylvania is primarily for new cars. There is a used car Lemon Law, but it's not used because it's not a very powerful legislation.
Is that right?
Yeah, it doesn't protect consumers like a Lemon Law does.
Okay.
So for used cars, you're looking at what they call common law causes of action developed by the courts, like fraud, breach of contract, and so forth. We also have a Pennsylvania Consumer Protection Law that gives you additional damages.
It has a lot of teeth, does it not?
Yeah, it is. More powerful than not having it. Some of it is based on discretion of the judge as to what he will enforce as exemplary damages. In this case, if you have actual damages, let's say the car's value is not $15,000 when you bought it, it's $7,000 because they didn't tell you about all these accidents and existing damage that it had. Well, that difference between $7,000 and $15,000 can then be trebled or tripled by the court, but it's up to the court to do that. So it could be stronger. New Jersey has mandatory treble damages if you prove the deceptive act by the dealer. So, but we have to deal with what we have in Pennsylvania, and it's better than nothing, that's for sure.
Well, can a new car be collision damaged before I buy it? I think we've already answered that. Mainly it could be, but you just couldn't prove it.
Well, so far we've been talking about used cars.
Mm.
Right,
so in this case, new, yeah.
Yeah, if a new car is damaged, that's something that, once again, people are not aware of enough. And it sounds like I'm criticizing the average person, but I'm not. These are all things that are easy to make these mistakes, and especially in this case, right? The car is represented to you as new. Well, how could it possibly be in a collision? Well, the answer to that is it could be damaged in transport, right, because the car's not being, it doesn't just materialize on the lot. It's got to come from somewhere else, and it's going to be shipped maybe on a shipping container, or it's going to be transported by truck. And when it comes off of any of those means of transport, it could be damaged.
Well, does the law require that the dealer tell me that?
It does. There's a new Motor Vehicle Damage Disclosure Act, which is a law that's not commonly known at all, certainly much less than something like a lemon law. And basically what it says is that the damages from the prior accident cost more than $500 to repair. The dealer's got to tell you about that. Hmm. And you're dealing with the same issues. Was it repaired properly? Right. You might have a new car, and all of a sudden you look at it after you buy it and say, wait, the paint's different on the door versus the front panel or the hood. And that may be an indication that this car was damaged before you bought it.
Interesting. That said, what can I sue for when I buy, let's say, a used car, back to used cars, and the dealer concealed serious damage or other problems from me during that sale?
So one of the elements I just mentioned briefly, but that is the diminished value of the car, right? A car's not worth as much. The market for it is reduced if it has damage issues, right? The reason why people want Carfaxes when they buy a car or research them is because they don't want to buy problems or as few problems as they can. And people are very concerned about collision accidents because cars are very sophisticated mechanisms. We don't know if they're well repaired or not. We're just lay people. And again, like we talked about, you're not going to put a car in a frame machine every time you look at one, right? And spend hundreds of dollars.
Indeed.
So diminished value is a big issue. And that becomes, and then there's also incidental damage you may have. The car sitting in your driveway. Well, now you have to get another car, right? So those are damages that you can assert. The treble the actual damages from the diminished value. Alternately, you can seek punitive damages, punish the dealer, right? Maybe this car was so bad that you got hurt when you drove it, and that could deserve punitive damage, or just the prospect of driving a dangerous car could deserve punitive damages from a jury. And then you're also, it's very important to note, as in most consumer cases, you're entitled to collect your attorney's fees. So you don't have to pay your attorney up front, like much as you would in a personal injury case. You have to wait for the result, and the attorney gets paid then. So that's a big relief to consumers when they know that.
Absolutely.
They don't have to pay me up front to take a case. We just have to have the right amount of damages to pursue it.
So, ladies and gentlemen, as you can tell, this is an expert at what this is all about in terms of consumer protection. You are listening to Mr. Robert P. Coco of the Law Offices of Robert Coco. I see that we have to take a break now, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be back shortly. You are listening to the Ask the Experts radio show on 610 ESPN in Philadelphia.
Did you know that one way to manage your debt is to sue creditors or debt collectors who have defrauded or abused you? Most Americans are carrying historically high levels of consumer debt, and when they can't manage it any longer, they often file bankruptcy. But if you don't owe some or all of a debt, or a debt collector is abusing you, you can fight back. State and federal consumer laws allow you to defend against and sue abusive corporations for money damages. This law is referred to as Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. These laws often force the corporations to pay your attorney fees and costs if you are successful. Some common debt disputes are your mortgage company threatening foreclosure for amounts paid or not owed, paying for a bad used car, including certified pre-owned cars, credit reports showing inaccurate reporting of debts, debt collectors yelling, insulting, or harassing you on the phone at home or at work. Let the Law Offices of Robert Coco PC defend your rights. Attorney Coco handles auto dealer fraud, illegal background checks for employees, credit report disputes, mortgage abuse, and wrongful foreclosures. Stop worrying today and contact Attorney Robert Coco PC at 215-351-0200. That's 215-351-0200.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. This is your host, Maurice Goodman, and you're listening to the Ask the Expert show on 610 ESPN in Philadelphia. Today we are talking to the expert in consumer protection law. That's Mr. Robert P. Coco of the Law Offices of Robert P. Coco. This is the gentleman you'd want to talk to if you have issues with consumer law. Bob, so we were talking a bit about cars, used, new, used cars, and the issues you may hit with them. People also own homes, And in those homes, they have mortgages. And there can occasionally be some problems with them. And, you know, a certain bank has created some problems in the past few days that they've had to get done. But then there's just a general issue of disputes and foreclosures. So, I mean, let's dive into that a little bit. So tell me this. So why does my, let's say I have a mortgage company. Why does my mortgage company, who I pay monthly payments to, why does it change so often?
Right. This is something very frustrating to people, especially when they're having a dispute with their mortgage company. They may be in the middle of a dispute, and then they get a letter saying, oh, we don't own your loan anymore. This company now owns your loan. So now you feel like, well, I have to start my dispute all over again with this new company. You shouldn't have to, but the reality is that's very often what happens. So in the modern mortgage marketplace, mortgages have become investment products. They always were, but with private mortgage banks getting involved in this, the separated ownership of the loan and what they call servicing of the loan, which basically is collecting the payments and then doing some other things in terms of making sure the fees are paid and so forth. But the result of this is that the servicing of these loans is sold very often. For example, after the mortgage crisis, a lot of the big banks, when they had to make agreements with the government for bad conduct, they said, okay, we're going to get out of accepting payments anymore. We're going to let somebody else do it because we got into too much trouble with
it. That was the crux of the whole crash, was it not?
Yeah. Yeah. It was not servicing, it was making loans improperly that were not fair or affordable, and then also screwing up receipt and accounting of payments. And that second problem is something that persists to this day. Mm. So when the servicing of your loan changes, it still may be owned by the same party, but you never have any contact with that party. You only have contact with the servicer or the collector of your payments. And the reason why that happens so often is just the modern mortgage place dictates that.
Interesting. So when and how do mortgage companies commonly cause problems for borrowers? Because that sounds like quite a brew, quite a mess.
Yeah, it certainly is. And part of it is that what we just talked about is that they're transferring these loans. You could have a new servicing company for your loan on an annual basis. And when that happens, the software systems that they use, and the bottom line is that your mortgage is serviced by software more than it is people.
A computer, not a person.
That's right.
Is what you're telling us.
That's right. And the computer is only as good as the person who's programmed the software for it, right? If the software is making mistakes, we want a person to get involved and correct that problem. But very often that's not the case until it reaches a crisis level, which is not good for the average person. And so when their software programs don't speak to each other, your loan going to a new company may cause problems. That's very often, in fact, what happens in the real world is that just the act of transferring the loan, even if you're doing everything right, making your payments every month, causes a problem. It shouldn't, but it does.
But, Bob, you know, I gotta go on a side item here. So have you had a situation with a client where you had the computer glitch and you actually had to go after the mortgage company and the computer operator at the same time to determine whether there wasn't a glitch with the system, but there was an issue inside the mortgage company? You ever had to have a fight with a IT person on top of the mortgage company?
Oh, well, the IT people are usually employed by the servicer. So if you're in a litigation and you have to conduct depositions of the parties involved to find out what's going on, yes, very often you'll have to not only depose someone in the business end, but also someone in the IT aspect of things to understand why those payments are showing as they do. Because a person may not be, can't explain sometimes what a software system's doing unless you're conversing with the software.
And it sounds like the mortgage company is at a loss itself because of that.
Well, that's the reality you're going to find is that it could be a surprise to them what's happening too.
Yeah, that's sobering and frightening. So what can I do if my mortgage company is charging me fees? Because fees is a big issue here. And I don't recognize or they're not saying something that I'm late for a missing payment when I don't agree.
Sure.
What are we doing with that one?
Yeah, so don't think you're crazy. Just because it's a big mortgage company and you're just one person, you could be very well be right. And there's a kind of an there is an easy way to start solving that problem, but it's one that people aren't used to doing these days, which is writing a letter. And what is in that letter is, and why you can write that letter is controlled by federal law. But there's nothing fancy involved. You can write a letter saying, I want to know why you're doing this. Why are you charging this fee to me? Why are you saying I'm late with my payments? Because I'm attaching my bank statements and it shows that I'm paying on time every month. Why are you doing this, right? So under the federal law, RESPA, Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, that's called a request for information. And you could put the bells and whistles in there in that letter if you want to, but it's not necessary. You can just request that information of them. But you want to make sure, as if you have a computer, it's easy to make sure that when you're requesting information from a mortgage servicer, you go to their website and send it to the address that they say, because they're going to have different addresses, mm-hmm. address you send payments to, an address you overnight information to, and so forth. But if you're questioning anything about your loan, they'll have a separate address you can do that. So you can request information, and the second thing that the RESPA law provides for is that you can tell them they're wrong, and it's called a notice of error, right? So everything's kind of in common sense terms, and it's meant to be that way so that you can enforce it. And you can say, not only why are you doing this, but if you have this evidence to show that they're wrong, then you can say, you're wrong. Please fix this. Right? You don't even have to say please. You can just say fix it.
Just say fix it.
Right.
Right. Especially when you feel that there's a sense of doubt in your or in your end.
Yeah.
Tell them to fix it.
Tell them to fix it.
It's called RESPA. Repeat that again. I think that's important.
Yes, RESPA. So it's an acronym. And so in all capital letters, it's RESPA. And it stands for Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act. And it governs accounting of loans. So you can ask for why your loan's being accounted for in a certain way, which is important because, for example, there's nothing that's similar to that for student loans, for car loans. There isn't an equivalent law that says, explain to me what you're doing or correct what you're doing, right? So it's a very important law. And also, you want to send any of those letters certified mail. Mm-hmm. You want to confirm that they got them.
That's important.
Always important because a lot of times people call on the phone, are very frustrated. I called 100 times. The problem with phone calls is if the party on the other end of the line is recording everything accurately in their computer system, the computer notes, you could be fine. Everything you said and everything they said could be there. But what if they're not? What if your mortgage company, who's not accounting for your payments, surprise, also has somebody working there who's not trained properly or who's not doing their job properly, right? You don't want to depend on them. You always want to memorialize things. But, you know, in the modern world, you're so used to sending emails, you're so used to talking on the phone, and people are not used to writing letters. It's become kind of an old-fashioned means of communication. But when it comes to disputes, it's the best one. If you're disputing your credit, if you're disputing your mortgage, any dispute you have, you want to record what your dispute is, mm-hmm. historically what's happened mm-hmm. in terms of communication, so that you don't have to rely on them for that. And that will be a very powerful aid to you if you have to go into litigation against them. Sometimes these letters work and they fix things, right? Which is great. But if they don't and you have to come see me, that's that much less I'll have to do for you. I'm happy to do it for you.
Of course.
And not charge you to do it, but you could get a leg up on the game by just making those common sense efforts.
Indeed. What we're going to do now is we're going to take a quick break. I just wanted to make sure, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening in and you have any questions of Bob, please call in at 888-728-9941. That's 888-728-9941. But we're going to take a quick break and come back on the other side and talk a little bit about foreclosure. This is the Ask the Experts radio show on 610 ESPN in Philadelphia.
Did you know that one way to manage your debt is to sue creditors or debt collectors who have defrauded or abused you? Most Americans are carrying historically high levels of consumer debt, and when they can't manage it any longer, they often file bankruptcy. But if you don't owe some or all of a debt, or a debt collector is abusing you, you can fight back. State and federal consumer laws allow you to defend against and sue abusive corporations for money damages. This law is referred to as Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. These laws often force the corporations to pay your attorney fees and costs if you are successful. Some common debt disputes are your mortgage company threatening foreclosure for amounts paid or not owed, paying for a bad used car, including certified pre-owned cars, credit reports showing inaccurate reporting of debts, debt collectors yelling, insulting, or harassing you on the phone at home or at work. Let the law offices of Robert Coco PC defend your rights. Attorney Coco handles auto dealer fraud, illegal background checks for employees, credit report disputes, mortgage abuse, and wrongful foreclosures. Stop worrying today and contact Attorney Robert Coco PC at 215-351-0200. That's 215-351-0200.
And we're back. This is your host, Marcus Goodman, and you're listening to the Ask the Experts show on 610 ESPN in Philadelphia. We greatly appreciate you taking your time to listen in with us today. You are listening to, along with me, interviewing the consumer protection lawyer, Robert P. Coco, of the law offices of Robert P. Coco. He is a consumer protection expert, knows what he's talking about. Currently, we've been talking a bit about mortgages as well as car usage and issues with consumer problems on cars. But right now, we're talking a bit more about homes and mortgages. Specifically, I wanted to dive in a bit on this section about foreclosure. Many, more than a few, have faced it. Millions, in fact. And so for those who feel like they know but don't really know, what is it? Can a bank take their home away if they're in foreclosure? And what should they do if they're being sued in foreclosure?
Right. So a common misconception with foreclosure is it's something that happens very suddenly and you lose your house very quickly. And that's, in Pennsylvania at least, that's not the case. So people should rest assured that even if they are going to face that process, and it's obviously a tough place to be, that you do have protections in place under the law, due process protections, right? They have to follow a certain procedure, the bank, when they want to take your home because you're not paying your mortgage loan. And it starts with them filing a complaint against you and filing it with the court, and then it has to be served upon you by a sheriff or a private individual, or if they get permission from the court, they could serve it on you by mail, which is common because people work during the day and they're not going to be around always to accept a document. And then the process in Philadelphia, for example, but it's true in other jurisdictions now, but Philadelphia was a pioneer in this, it goes into a kind of a mediation process. They call it conciliation, but the name itself doesn't really matter, where they try to bring together the mortgage companies and the consumer borrowers and see if they can work it out, right? Especially if you're not too far behind, there's not too big of an issue. And that's been very successful. We have a very good community legal services that helps people who are indigent, poor parts of our population. But if you don't have community legal services representing you, you can represent yourself. The system is designed for that. But you have to be very careful that if that system's not working for you, that you get legal representation and avoid a judgment being taken against you, right? A judgment in any case means that you essentially have lost. You never want that.
Right.
You always want to get a lawyer involved before you lose against the mortgage company. So if the negotiation's not working, you always want to file an answer to a complaint, right, which says, no, I have a defense. If you do have a defense, right, you could be in a position where you could file bankruptcy. Bankruptcy is perfectly appropriate, but you don't want to go there first. Your credit situation is already bad with the foreclosure. Maybe the bank is responsible for the foreclosure, like we were talking about earlier. If you're telling them, hey, I'm not late on my payments, I'm making all my payments, I didn't miss any payments, right? That means you should not be in foreclosure. But sometimes the banks file what we call wrongful foreclosures, right? Wrongful foreclosure, meaning that the bank is the one who's caused the default, not you, right? The foreclosure process is there for when people make mistakes, right, and or unable to pay the loan. That's a proper lawful foreclosure. But if the bank is screwing up your accounting, whether it's because of their software or for some other reason, that's not your fault. So you don't want them to get a judgment against you. Not only that, not only do you want to defend yourself, but you want to defend yourself for the purpose of then turning the tables on the bank and suing them, whether it's under RESPA or Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, or other laws that allow you to go on the offensive against a bad bank.
So, Bob, this is pretty fresh right now because, again, a certain bank has just been pinged for having that very issue occur, where there seems to be a number of wrongful foreclosures because of the era of the bank. Are you actively having people reach out to you right now regarding that particular issue of that particular bank right now, or are there other things that you're facing in regard to wrongful foreclosures?
Yes, so there's been a lot of news about Wells Fargo admitting to bad practices, filing foreclosures in California, for example, where they should not have. But it's not just that bank. There's many other banks that do the same thing. Maybe the degree to which it occurs is different, but it's something you have to be on guard for, no matter who your mortgage company, mortgage servicer is.
Mm. So let me ask you this. So should I file bankruptcy to prevent my home from being sold at sheriff's sale if it gets to that?
Well, if you're facing a sheriff's sale, if you haven't found a lawyer, and very often the sad reality is that some people will look for a consumer lawyer or just any lawyer to defend them in a foreclosure and can't find one,
mm-hmm.
Because there's not many consumer lawyers out there, or there's not enough, I should say.
Mm.
And as a result, if you're facing sheriff's sale, sometimes, whether it's because of limited financial resources or the lack of a defense, bankruptcy is a perfectly viable option. But it's still possible sometimes to reverse judgments. It depends on what the circumstances are. So I still like to talk to people at whatever stage of the game they're on, even if it's to refer them to a lawyer who's going to perform a bankruptcy for them in a very competent and fair and charge them fairly for it.
How often do you see scenarios like this where people are trying to make that decision?
Oh, that's a daily, if weekly, if not daily, issue.
Is that right?
There's still a lot of problems in the economy. You know, whether we're really out of a recession or not is highly debatable.
Mm.
And as a result, these are problems that are persisting from 2008 when it all collapsed. Now, not the bad loans being made so much, right, because that stopped, but people having problems with mortgage companies is a persistent issue.
That's still persistent?
Yes.
Hmm. Let's say I have an FHA or VA loan. So do I have any special protections if I go into default that conventional mortgage borrowers don't have?
Yes, that's good news for you if you have one of those loans. And unfortunately, too often the mortgage company will act as if you don't have one of those loans and just treat your loan as a conventional loan without the protections that come from having a government-sponsored loan.
Mm.
So a Fair Housing Administration or Veterans Administration loan means that when the bank is making that loan to you, they are allowing you, if you're purchasing a home, to put less down, right? So that increases the risk for the bank. So how does the government, federal government, encourage the bank to make that loan? By offering an insurance fund in case of default, right? The HUD insurance fund will pay the default amount. But in return for that, the government expects something from the bank, right? And that is to help you avoid default or to help you cure the default. It has some very powerful means to do that in the law. There's essentially three what they call loss mitigation options or three cures for a default. One is a partial claim, which is simply means that whatever the amount of the default is, if you're able to pay your monthly mortgage payment now, you've gotten through things sufficiently that you're back on your feet, then that whole default goes on the end of your loan and without bearing interest. They can modify your loan so that you can make a monthly payment that's affordable
a big one,
to you.
Yep.
Or if your arrears, the amount that you owe, is not too great, you can pay a little bit of it back over time, maybe 18 months, so you pay an extra $100 to $200 a month in addition to your regular monthly mortgage payment. So those are all things that you have as remedies that if you're able, if you're back on your feet again, as I said, you're able to pay your monthly payment, including your escrow payment for taxes and insurance, all those remedies should be available to you. So most people should be able to get back on their feet without bankruptcy, without fighting the foreclosure to any great extent, just filling out paperwork to indicate that's what their situation is, and you should be okay. Now, that's a problem, is that the banks won't recognize that on their own very often, and you have to get a lawyer who says, hey, bank, this person has an FHA loan. They have a VA loan. Let's follow the federal law, give them their loss mitigation options. Let's get them back out of default, out of foreclosure, and back on their feet.
Indeed. Indeed. And that is a powerful piece there, and that's greatly appreciated. Along with those items, be it your car, your home, there's just a general issue of debt, where people spend their money. They do a certain amount of credit card debt. There's the issue then that if you go a little bit over, collections. What can I do to stop harassing phone calls from debt collectors?
Okay, so once again, we're going back to letter writing.
We're back to letter writing
again. We're back to letter writing. Yes, you don't have to do it with a quill pen. You can do it with a you can do it with your computer, but that's the most effective means. So, for example, it's very common that people will get called at work for debt collection. And if your employer, which of course is common, doesn't want you taking debt collection calls at work.
Oh, that's not good.
No, not good. You can, but it doesn't matter what the reason is. Or you can state whatever the reason is. It just may be disrupting to your daily life. You can send a letter to the debt collector saying that stop calling me persistently and say why. For example, if you can't pay the debt, then you want to tell them that, right? That may be the reality of things. So if they keep calling you after you tell them you can't pay it in writing, once again, certified mail, make sure they're getting it. Otherwise, they're going to say never got it. Or it could be any means that you confirm receipt. It doesn't have to be a certified mail. It could be FedEx, whatever it is. But and when you do that, you tell them to cease and desist the collection. And if they don't, you can sue them under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act if they persist with calls that are unreasonable in number, the time of day they call. They can call from 8 in the morning to 9 at night. Mm-hmm. But they can't deceive you or act in an unreasonable way or insult you in the process of debt collection.
Just a quick one. They call you at work nowadays? They can call you at work? I mean, on the landline or on your cell phone at work? I mean, they wouldn't know if it's your cell phone, but at work, your landline potentially?
Yeah, so let's talk about both of those. So very often, yeah, they'll try to – if they can't locate you at your home, and as I was talking about with foreclosures and serving people at a home, it's a similar problem sometimes for a debt collector because it's perfectly lawful to collect the debt as long as
sure.
you're staying within the law. So if you're at work and they can get you on the phone at work, they're going to.
Huh. Right?
Now, that's fine if you're having a cordial conversation and you say, hey, you owe – $50 and you say, hey, I'd like to pay that $50 and get rid of this problem, then there's no problem calling you at work. But the problem is if it's more contentious than that, then it's a problem. And if it's persistent, it's a problem.
So what do I do if I get sued on a credit card debt?
So if you're sued on a credit card debt, once again, you want to consider whether or not the debt is sufficient that it warrants you hiring an attorney, because unlike the affirmative cases that I bring for consumers, which never involve me collecting money from them, if I'm defending a case, very often there's not going to be a law that's going to permit me to get paid. So I'm going to have to charge the consumer something to do so. So if you're being sued for a $1,000 debt, you're not going to want to pay me $1,000 to defend you because you can just pay it yourself. Now, that assumes, of course, that you do owe the debt, because if you don't owe it at all, if they're confusing you, your name's John Smith, but you're not the John Smith who owes the debt, or you paid the debt, then that's a situation where you want to sue the debt collector because you're not supposed to pay debts that you don't owe, obviously, under the law. But otherwise, if it's a debt that is defensible, especially if you, in addition to the obvious, if you paid it, you don't owe it, there's also situations where debt buyers will buy the debt. And although it may seem counterintuitive, they very often can't prove that they bought the debt because there's no recognized form of transferring an unsecured debt like a credit card. So they'll buy a computer spreadsheet. They won't buy sufficient information to meet the rules of evidence. So if it's a considerable amount of money, you want to try to defend and defeat that effort by a third party who's bought your debt, who bought it for pennies, right? They sued you for $10,000. They may have bought it for $500 or $200. And so there's legal technical arguments that it's going to be hard for you to make on your own, but a lawyer can make for you.
Indeed. I see that we do have to take a bit of a break here, ladies and gentlemen. You're talking to Mr. Robert P. Coco of the Law Offices of Robert Coco, your consumer protection lawyer, here on the Ask the Experts radio show on 610 ESPN in Philadelphia.
Did you know that one way to manage your debt is to sue creditors or debt collectors who have defrauded or abused you? Most Americans are carrying historically high levels of consumer debt, and when they can't manage it any longer, they often file bankruptcy. But if you don't owe some or all of a debt, or a debt collector is abusing you, you can fight back. State and federal consumer laws allow you to defend against and sue abusive corporations for money damages. This law is referred to as Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. These laws often force the corporations to pay your attorney fees and costs if you are successful. Some common debt disputes are your mortgage company threatening foreclosure for amounts paid or not owed, paying for a bad used car, including certified pre-owned cars, credit reports showing inaccurate reporting of debts, debt collectors yelling, insulting, or harassing you on the phone at home or at work. Let the Law Offices of Robert Coco PC defend your rights. Attorney Coco handles auto dealer fraud, illegal background checks for employees, credit report disputes, mortgage abuse, and wrongful foreclosures. Stop worrying today and contact Attorney Robert Coco PC at 215-351-0200. That's 215-351-0200.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. This is your host, Maurice Goodman, and you're listening to the Ask the Experts radio show on 610 ESPN in Philadelphia. Today we're talking to Mr. Robert Coco of the Law Offices of Robert P. Coco. He is your consumer protection lawyer. He's very good at that. And we've been talking a bit about the collections. We were talking a bit about some of the things about being called at work, but also on your cell phone as well. They talk a bit about that.
Yeah, so there's special protections for consumers when you're called on your cell phone, because unlike a landline, you're charged per call under cell phone billing. So there's another law called the Telephone Consumer Protection Act. And, of course, it's not necessarily important to remember the names of these laws, just to know that you have legal rights when something happens. But when you're called on your cell phone, and you've not given permission for whoever's calling you to call you on your cell phone, and very often it's debt collectors in these situations who, once again, are either confusing you with someone else. That's probably the most common thing. But they also may be calling you about a debt where you never gave the creditor who they're collecting for your cell phone number. So the Telephone Consumer Protection Act allows you to collect $500 per call for negligent calls and $1,500 per call for what they call a willful call, which doesn't mean that they willfully are breaking the law. It just means that they know that they don't have or should know that they don't have permission to call you on your cell phone, but they do it anyhow. And those dollars can add up. If they're calling you at a harassing level, they're calling you 5 times a day, 10 times a day. So when that happens, you do want to engage them at least once, if you can, and find out why they're calling and who they are. Because sometimes these calls are scam calls. They're done by criminals, essentially, who may be in or out of the country. And there's even if they're treating you abusively by their phone calls, there may be nobody to sue. But if it's a corporation, a debt collection corporation or some other corporation that is trying to solicit you for something, maybe not collect a debt, maybe solicit you to do something, if they're a real company, then you can sue them to stop that abusive activity.
Indeed. So what do I do if I find a judgment against me and I never receive the notice of the collection lawsuit to begin with so I can defend myself?
So what you can do in that situation, there's something that is called sewer service.
Okay.
Meaning that there's certain companies that will essentially lie about having served you with a complaint, right? So just like we were talking about with foreclosures, which are started by a complaint, any debt collection matters is started by a complaint too. A debt collection lawsuit, rather, is started by a complaint. And when they do that, you have a right to notice of that. And that's the whole service process, right? It's to serve you in person or by mail with permission. And if you don't get that notice, you can seek to open that judgment up again. Now, if it's your fault that they didn't serve you at the right address, that may not be available to you. But very often they should know that you're not where you are any longer, where you were, rather, any longer. And you can open the judgment saying, look, I never got a proper notice and therefore a proper chance to defend myself, and I want that chance now. And if you do have a defense to that debt, that's something you want to pursue, because not only will it get that judgment off your credit, but, again, if you were sued wrongfully, it'll give you the opportunity to sue them for doing something unlawful like that.
Back to cars a little bit in terms of collections. Is there anything that I could do about a judgment for the balance of, say, an auto loan after my car was repossessed?
Yeah, so in Pennsylvania, when they repossess your car, they don't have to give you notice before they repossess it, but after they repossess it, they have to give you notice before they sell it.
Mm.
And they have to send that to you certified mail to prove that they sent it to you.
Still with certified mail.
Yes, it's a constant theme, and it's important everybody remembers it. So if they don't do that, the consequence of that is that the auto lender or auto finance company is stuck with whatever they sold that car for at sale.
Mm.
So if you owe them $10,000 and they sold your car at auction for $5,000, but they never gave you notice of the sale, well, that $5,000 is all they're entitled to by law.
Mm.
So you want to make sure that the company's following the law before they try to sue you for a balance of it. And once again, not only do you have a defense, but very often as a consumer, if you are right and the company pursuing you is wrong, you can not only successfully defend the case, but sue them for their bad conduct.
So a couple of quick questions here. So am I entitled to reinstate my car loan if I'm in default and my car is repossessed?
So very often, unfortunately, you're not under contract.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't mean that the finance company can't say, hey, you've been a good customer, and we want to let you pay whatever it is you owe, 2 months, 3 months. They can do that voluntarily.
Okay.
And if they do agree to do that, once again, confirm it in writing with them that they've agreed to do that, because that very often that will not be put in their own computer notes.
Interesting. Now, should I voluntarily, say, return my car to a bank if I can't pay the financing for it?
Well, that is a last resort. You always want to try to reinstate. You don't want to have a car voluntarily repossessed if there's a problem with that car.
Mm-hmm.
So if they sold you a bad car, don't turn it back, because it could be evidence in a used car auto fraud case, as we were talking about at the top of the show.
Mm. And all of this comes back to credit, right? You know, the good neighbor policy of credit. I mean, if I trust you, you trust me. How do I remove negative information from my credit report? And what are some of the common errors of credit reports?
Well, I guess everybody's tired of me talking about letter writing, but once again, we return to it. It's your best friend.
Reading and writing is fundamental.
That's right. We don't want to get away from it completely. And here, there's alternate means of credit disputes. There's electronic means that the credit reporting agencies try to promote. But the key to any effective credit dispute is attaching evidence that you're right. Right? So you could ask the credit reporting agency to do something, correct this, correct that, but why should they if you don't give them any evidence that that's the truth of the matter? And that's why they should do it, because it's what is being reported is inaccurate or untruthful.
Can I sue?
You can sue after you give the credit reporting agencies the opportunity to correct the information.
Hmm.
You should always copy the creditor who's furnishing the credit information to the credit reporting agency, because under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, you have to give them the opportunity to fix it before you can sue them.
Now, what do I do if I'm a victim of ID theft?
With ID theft, you always want to report it to the police, because, as I just said, you want to have evidence of your position. And the best evidence of that is that you've gone to the police and credibly told them that you were a victim of it. You're not just saying it. You're not just making it up. It's real. And you've told law enforcement, and you're not going to inference, of course, when you report something to police, you're not going to lie to the police.
Sure. Indeed. And with good credit, sometimes, there could be an issue with good or bad credit when it comes to being employed. Does debt or credit affect a person's chances of getting hired for a job?
It could very well affect your chances, especially if you're working in the finance industry or seeking to work in the finance industry or seeking to work in law enforcement. In the finance industry, they want people to be honest and competent with their own finances, obviously. And in law enforcement, they don't want their law enforcement officers being bribed because they are having a tough time in their personal lives. So it's not only important to remember that your credit can affect employment, but that pool of computer data that your credit comes from has a lot of other information about you in those computer data banks that can come up in a background check if you're going for a job. Most employers now will demand a background check for legal liability and other reasons, and there's information about your employment, about your criminal history, as well as your credit history, and also about your educational history, and all that information is in the same pool of consumer data.
Very good. Well, with that, we want to thank you very much, Mr. Coco, for your time. We really appreciate that, running up against the clock a bit. But what I wanted to do is to make sure you got your information to our listeners so they can get in contact with you.
Yes, thank you. So if anyone wants to contact me, my phone number is 215-351-0200, 215-0200, 215 area code. And I never charge anybody for speaking with them or consulting with them in person. So please feel free to call me, and we can discuss what your problem is and see how I can best help you.
That's great. We greatly appreciate your time, Bob. We really do. I want to thank you and our sound engineer, Mr. Mike Vito. This is Maurice Goodman, and you've been listening to the Ask the Experts radio show on 610 ESPN in Philadelphia. We'll see you next week. Have a great day.
Did you know that one way to manage your debt is to sue creditors or debt collectors who have defrauded or abused you? Most Americans are carrying historically high levels of consumer debt, and when they can't manage it any longer, they often file bankruptcy. But if you don't owe some or all of a debt, or a debt collector is abusing you, you can fight back. State and federal consumer laws allow you to defend against and sue abusive corporations for money damages. This law is referred to as Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. These laws often force the corporations to pay your attorney fees and costs if you are successful. Some common debt disputes are your mortgage company threatening foreclosure for amounts paid or not owed, paying for a bad used car, including certified pre-owned cars, credit reports showing inaccurate reporting of debts, debt collectors yelling, insulting, or harassing you on the phone at home or at work. Let the law offices of Robert Coco PC defend your rights. Attorney Coco handles auto dealer fraud, illegal background checks for employees, credit report disputes, mortgage abuse, and wrongful foreclosures. Stop worrying today and contact Attorney Robert Coco PC at 215-351-0200. That's 215-351-0200. Thanks for listening to the Ask the Expert show today. Join us again next week for more specialists in their field of legal health, financial, and home improvement.